Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Welcome to the RotoWire Prospect Podcast, sponsored by WinBet. I'm Clay Link here with RotoWire.com's lead prospect analyst, James Anderson. James, a lot of movement over the past week. The deadline now seems like a long time ago. But what a crazy flurry of moves that was. It was pretty fun to witness. As a fan, we'll get to a lot of those moves. How are you doing today, man? What's going on outside of work in your life?
Not much. I mean, the weather's great. I haven't really been doing much besides work. I mean, I've been really focused on my fantasy teams. Was up north at a friend's cabin over the weekend, but it's kind of down to the home stretch, and I'm really sort of sweating the standings on a day-to-day basis here. So
it's a good sweat to have. That's
yeah.
Great, man. I'm glad you're doing so well in your leagues. I'm getting to ride your coattails in the main a little bit. Our team's doing pretty well. Top 60 in the overall last time I checked. I don't want to jinx us, but I'm glad you're having such a good year overall yourself.
It's right.
I'm within striking distance in a lot of leagues.
It's funny because I'm top four in all three of my main leagues, and Todd Whitestone and I are in first place in one of our main event leagues, and we have 107 league points in that league, and you and I have 107 league points in our league, and we're in second place, but we're 52nd in the overall in that league, and the one where Todd and I are in first place, we're 116th in the overall. So you and I are doing something right in terms of contending in the overall. I mean, I don't know if we got enough time to push all the way up there, but yeah, I mean, we've somehow been just sort of grinding through these injuries to our early round hitters, and just hoping for the best. I mean, we're kind of we dealt with the issue of being almost down to dollar days on Fab this weekend, where we got shut out on a bunch of bids. But yeah, I mean, that's going to make it tough. But I mean, I hope that we can just kind of grind it out.
Yeah, we've had some really key pickups, like Abraham Toro, who I know you were the one who put the bid in on him, getting him for like a buck or whatever it was. And Dalton Varsho too. So some of those pickups that were pretty darn cheap at the time.
Akil Badu was a good one.
Yeah, Akil Badu. That's a great call. Vidal Brujan didn't work out, and I apologize for that. And I did drop Andrés Giménez, too, who I kind of wish we could have picked up. This past week, I think we got outbid by like a dollar, like 3-2, but we could use some bags, and I think he should be up pretty soon, Andrés Giménez. But glad to hear everything's good for you. I know you're busy with work, but outside of work for me, you know, I heard my brother called me today with an urgent report on the locks versus Versus Dipset. Yeah, battle versus battle last night. So I gotta have to check that out. And I just want to say I've considered myself a documentary film buff, James. But I had never seen, and I'm embarrassed to say, I'd never seen Hearts of Darkness, the documentary about the making of Apocalypse Now. Great documentary. We got Francis Ford Coppola, like shirtless and shoeless, walking around filming his movie, and Marty Sheen, like drunk on set, having a really heartfelt moment. This is just a great documentary. So highly recommend Hearts of Darkness for you out there. But James, let's get into some baseball here. Guys on the move at the deadline. Let's talk first about how you think the Nats did tearing everything down. I'm going to be visiting DC in September. My brother and I are going to go to a game, and won't be much to see outside of Juan Soto, but Juan Soto will put butts in the seats himself. But Josiah Gray, Keibert Ruiz, pretty nice 1-2. How would you grade what the Nationals did at the deadline?
I think they did a really solid job. It's depressing a little bit, I guess, if you're a Nats fan, just because you did well on that return, I think. Maybe for fantasy, like, you know, you're not going to wow someone by trading for Josiah Gray or Keibert Ruiz in a dynasty league. But the fact that those guys are probably at the two most coveted big league positions and are big league ready, that was going to trump the best package most teams could put together for Scherzer and Turner. But I think, like, kind of the more depressing thing, if I'm a Nats fan, is just you look at that roster, you look at the farm system, even with these nice additions. And I mean, it really seems like this is going to be a long road back. It just, you know, they're really kind of decimated in terms of high end talent. And that part of that was just the farm system was so weak heading into the trade deadline that even adding those guys, it's still a bottom 10 system probably. And yeah, I think they've done solid in some recent drafts, but you know, you don't have to apologize for that when you go win a World Series. I think they did quite well. And Keibert Ruiz, it's great to see him go to a team where he's going to be the guy going forward long term. I know he's not. They sent him down and everything, but you know, if you got Ruiz in a dynasty league, this is awesome. Even if you have Gray in a dynasty league, I mean, this is pretty nice because the Dodgers just had so much internal pitching depth that Gray was going to get kind of the Tony Gonsolin treatment here for the next year or two if he'd stayed in LA. So, you know, most teams would have a really hard time parting with those two guys in a trade, even when you're getting Scherzer and Turner, just because you got like a combined, like 13 years of control probably between those two. But they were spare pieces for the Dodgers. So I think it ended up being a win-win, but it's going to be a couple more lean years, I think, in Washington before there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
With Keibert Ruiz, I picked him up in the stake league. That is only a one catcher league, but I just needed some, what I was hoping would be a warm body. But he, as you mentioned, was not called up right away, and I think assigned to AAA. I'd imagine we see him for a little bit because I don't really think you play service time games with a catcher like this, but maybe they don't call him up. Who knows? We'll see. And Josiah Gray, I want to throw you an either or. I'm kind of putting you on the spot, James, but these two went in the same week in Fab and the Towers head-to-head, and I got Luis Patino of the Rays for like $1.00, and this guy, well, Josiah Gray went for more. So I'm wondering, rest of season and long-term, do you like Luis Patino versus a guy like Josiah Gray? Who'd you rather have?
I like Patino. Not by a large margin, but I think he's got a higher ceiling. And, you know, I mean, I wouldn't judge him by, I know he's had a few rough starts. He did have a really nice outing against the Yankees last week. I wouldn't judge Patino too harshly on, you know, his overall numbers at the big league level, because, you know, if you want to go look at who my top pitching prospects in the minors are, they're all basically Patino's age or older, and they're not necessarily all that close to the majors, with the exception of Shane Baz. So the fact that he's even made this many starts in the majors before turning 22 and has flashed that potential, you know, he's even with that, those kind of bloated ERA numbers, I mean, I still think he's pitched pretty well this year. So I'd go Patino. But that's no slight on Gray. I think Patino's got a really nice future, and I anticipate, you know, if Patino could finish the year healthy, I anticipate having a decent amount of him in redraft leagues next year.
Yeah, I like Patino quite a bit. I'm excited about both of those arms, frankly. And after the Yankee outing that you alluded to for Patino, it seemed like on Twitter the hype was building for Patino, and seems like for good reason. He's, you know, the overall numbers may underwhelm a little bit, but he's flashed some serious upside, Patino. So I'm kind of excited about him. I got him in head-to-head, which, you know, I'll need him in September. It's all about making the postseason, and we'll see how you do in September. You mentioned Shane Baz. You know, they got Waka in there. I guess Archer's on his way back, but do you think the door's still open for Baz to debut this year?
Yeah, definitely. I don't necessarily know when it'll be. I mean, as you alluded to, they sort of just seem to have a never-ending supply of guys ready to step into that rotation. But Baz has been really lights out, even after getting the bump up to AAA. And, you know, he could just be – I mean, this is a team that wants to win World Series, right? And he could just be a dynamic, like, two-inning guy who you use to put out fires in the middle innings and in the postseason. They might want to break him in that type of role in September, but, you know, obviously, hopefully we'd like him to either be used as a traditional starter or to follow an opener, or maybe be the second guy in a piggyback situation. I think all three of those are potential possibilities with him, but the Rays are definitely going to want to be careful with his innings. You know, he hasn't thrown a ton this year, but I mean, this is a guy with a very, very risky profile from a health standpoint, just given how hard he throws and how young he is. I think they're going to want to be very careful with him, but he's so electric and so good that I think they are going to want to get him acclimated to be part of that postseason run. We'll mention this later in the show, but I am going to be doing a kind of a mini update to the top 100 or so of the top 400 in a day or two, and I've already started working on that. Baz is going to be a top three pitching prospect. Sort of the rough draft I have right now is Grayson Rodriguez, Max Meyer, and Shane Baz back to back to back in the high 30s. And, you know, I wouldn't be that surprised if Baz entered next year as the top pitching prospect in the game, depending on how he looks down the stretch here.
Yeah, I hated to see the news about Tyler Glass now, and that's tough. But Baz, I think, could have a bright future there, and also a part of that trade with Glass now, of course. Now, with the Nats getting Josiah Gray and Keibert Ruiz, is kind of like the big two in that Scherzer-Turner deal. I initially was like, yeah, not bad. But then I saw what the Twins got for just Berríos. And, you know, Turner's got another year beyond this year, so he's not just a rental. It almost felt like the return for Berríos, just Berríos, was on par with what the Nats got for Scherzer and Turner. Would you agree with that, or am I a little off base there?
I think for fantasy, I think you'd rather have the Twins return, but for real life, I think you'd rather have what the Nationals got because
by a decent margin. I mean, it just seemed rather close to me. And
I mean, here's the thing: like, big league teams care so much about catchers and starting pitchers, but really, like, catchers like Ruiz are just the absolute like pinnacle in terms of assets in a trade like this. So to get a catcher who's big league ready, who has shown the type of offensive upside that Ruiz has shown at AAA this year, who's going to be able to be a solid defensive catcher, like, that's going to dwarf most deals out there, most prospect packages out there. Like, I think, like, Keibert Ruiz, like, I think you have a case that he's like a top 15 real life prospect in the game. And he's nowhere near that for fantasy, but you know, we want guys like Austin Martin, guys who are gonna maybe have multi-position eligibility, gonna play every day, gonna possibly be five category guys. Like, you'd much rather have Austin Martin than Ruiz in fantasy, but I think it's just that catcher tax in real life, it's very real. And I also think, you know, Simeon Woods Richardson was a guy who I had ranked ahead of Josiah Gray for most of the season. But Woods Richardson has really just kind of like something's off with him right now. And I don't really know what it is, but he's just been really bad over his last like 10 starts or so. And he was absolutely excellent over his first, you know, whatever, 8 starts. So I think you look at that and you look at the fact that Gray is up. Like, it's not like you have to wait for him to go like fix whatever's ailing Woods Richardson and then go to AAA. Like, Gray's ready. Gray's big league ready. So you get a big league like number 3 starter, and you get a big league ready catcher who could be a plus offensive contributor and a solid defensive contributor. I think that from a real life standpoint, I think pretty much every team would take the package the Nats got. But that's really more just about the proximity aspect and just how much that matters to big league clubs. And it really does kind of showcase the difference between real life prospect value and dynasty prospect value.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You're right about the real life catching tax. And it's, you know, for good reason. I'm wondering, do you know how Ruiz grades out in terms of like framing and receiving?
I think, you know, I'm not going to claim to be an expert on that with him. From what I can recall, like, in terms of just, you know, whenever I'm looking at like a catcher framing, like, for the most part, like, sometimes a guy will just be so bad that it stands out, like, when you're just watching a game, like, but from what I've been able to gather, he's continued to improve at that aspect of his game over the past few years. The Dodgers are great at teaching guys that skill.
The reason I asked is just because the more I hear about the robo umps on the farm, the more I feel like it's probably a little ways away.
Yeah.
Or coming maybe as soon as I thought a couple years ago. Just a lot to iron out still on that end.
I don't think teams are factoring that in, like, in sort of in the back of their minds, but
still a ton of value being placed on good receiving, right, and good framing. Yeah.
I'll put it this way. Like, I have not heard anyone say in recent years that there's really any shot of Ruiz having to move off catcher. So I think, like, at worst, you're probably getting like an average defensive catcher.
Well, before we move on, let's first throw to a quick word from our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And now we're back on the RotoWire Prospect Podcast, sponsored by WinBet. The Cubs, as part of their teardown, they bring in Pete Crow Armstrong, Nick Madrigal, Kevin Alcantara, Alexander Vizcaino, Alexander Canario, Caleb Killian. What do you think of this Cubs? I mean, this seems like a full-on rebuild. What do you think of this move and how they did, well, all these moves and how they did to refill the system?
So I'd give them an A-plus on the Baez return, getting Pete Crow Armstrong. I mean, that's just an absolutely awesome get for a guy like Baez. I mean, I think Crow Armstrong could be a top 15 prospect in like a year. He's obviously done for the season. He only played in like a dozen games or something like that before. Can't even remember what his injury was, but I mean, he's just, I think he's a five tool guy. Shoulder injury. I think he's a five tool guy. I think he's someone that could hit first or second in a big league lineup someday. So I think the Cubs absolutely crushed it with Crow Armstrong. Nick Madrigal, I mean, I think that's fine. From a real life standpoint, Nick Madrigal is maybe a bit better than, well, actually, I don't know. he's just such a tough guy to value. But I think getting a guy like that who has proven that he's a very legitimate 300 or better hitter, and he's obviously big league ready. The Cubs don't mind that he's hurt right now, whereas the White Sox, like the White Sox aren't trading Madrigal if he's healthy, but the White Sox want to win this World Series before there's a potential lockout. So, I applaud the White Sox for being willing to trade a guy like that. I think the Cubs did fine in the Kimbrel deal. The Rizzo deal, I think they did solid. I mean, I think that's just kind of a big gamble on Kevin Alcantara, but he's got a ton of upside, and he's had a strong start to the year. Alexander Vizcaino, he's someone that I was really high on before the year, and he's dealt with some injuries and he hasn't performed very well in a small sample. Since those injuries, I've actually moved on from Vizcaino in some dynasty leagues just because, like, you know, I mean, with a pitching prospect who's not all that close to the majors and has some relief risk and has been hurt and has not been performing, like, I think you got to be willing to move on from those guys in dynasty. The one where I didn't like the return for Chris Bryant, Canario, you know, he's got as much raw power as almost anyone in the minors. But I think the reason why the Giants had no problem moving on from him is because he already had to be added to the 40-man roster, and he's nowhere close to big league ready. So you're going to have to carry Canario on your 40-man for the next like 2 years. And maybe if you're lucky, he's ready then. So I just don't think that's all that great of a use of a 40-man spot. But if you're rebuilding, I guess you can kind of deal with it. But I mean, the strikeouts are always going to be a huge issue with him. The raw power is massive. I mean, maybe he could be a Jorge Soler type of guy, but I just don't love that. And then Killian, I mean, the numbers look great. The stuff is probably not as good as the numbers. So maybe you get a fourth or fifth starter with him. But, I mean, I think the reason that that haul was worse than the haul for the other guys is just because of the amount of money that Bryant's owed over the rest of the season. But I think the Bryant return was the worst return. But I think given that they did so well for Baez, they did pretty well for Kimbrel, they did solid for Rizzo. I mean, I think they did a really nice job on the whole. Just getting a guy like Pete Crow Armstrong into your system who you can really kind of pencil in as like a future high-end everyday player for you. And his timeline lines up pretty well with a lot of their other high-end offensive players like Reginald Preciado, Ed Howard, guys like that. I mean, Brendan Davis will probably be ready sometime next year, but you know, Christian Hernandez, guys like that. I mean, that he kind of lines up with that timeline. So I think just getting Crow Armstrong makes this a massive win for the Cubs.
Nice. Yeah, not a lot of players, you know, in this group who you think about stashing for this year. It's not really stashing season at all anymore, hardly. I mean, it's kind of sad, but minor leagues wrap up after this month and no roster expansion, too. I think rosters stay at 26 all year, right? Maybe they go to 27, but not really stashing season. But I do want to ask you, were you in on Rafael Ortega? He's a guy who, with the trades from the Cubs, you know, playing time opens up. I added him in one league after that three-homer game, but do you think this is just a flash in the pan? 30-year-old?
Tried to add him in a few places over the weekend, was unsuccessful. That three-homer game definitely put him in a price range I wasn't willing to go in FBC leagues. But
I was surprised I got him. I got him in the FSGA league where I'm second, trying to track down our buddies at the NFBC, Greg and Tom. So I'm a little invested in Rafael Ortega now.
I think it's a good – you know, you just ride the hot bat, ride the guy who's playing every day. A little bit of power, a little bit of speed. I mean, I was trying to get him, but I wasn't, you know, I think you've probably already seen his best production, so I wasn't going to go crazy for him.
Absolutely. Now, for the Rangers with their rebuild, you know, behind Spencer Howard, I don't recognize a lot of these names. I do recognize Kevin Gowdy, but this doesn't seem like a great influx on paper. Am I wrong in that? Do you like the return for Texas?
You know, I don't like it that much. I mean, it was originally reported that Everson Pereira was going to be in the deal, and that not happening made it less exciting. I mean, he's a guy that you could really dream on who's having a breakout year. And he actually just got bumped up to high A. He was at low A for like a couple weeks, and he started in the Florida Complex League. So Pereira's already on his third level this year in about a month. So him not being in the deal after it was reported that he was in the deal is disappointing. Josh Smith is a guy who I've been high on for a while, and Clay, he's the type of guy that you would make fun of me for being high on because he's a second baseman who is a little old. He's going to turn 24 here shortly. But I mean, his statistically, he just absolutely pops, and he's definitely been old for his levels, but, you know, the pandemic kind of played a role in that, right? Like, I mean, he would have opened at high A this year or maybe at low A, but he would have opened in a full season league, last year had there not been the pandemic. And so he's kind of making up for lost time, but everywhere this guy goes, he just tears it up. He's never hit worse than 320 at a level. He's never been worse than 60% better than league average at a level. He's pretty much had walk rates over 12% at every stop prior to this trade. And so I mean, I'm really into what he could do as a, you know, like a number two hitter, maybe if he were to max out. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me also if he gets bumped up to double A and maybe hits a bit of a wall where these crazy eye popping stats just tail off in a hurry once he gets bumped up to double A or triple A. So, that's why he was available. I mean, the Yankees were like, let's cash this guy out now while his, you know, statistics look so pristine, rather than risk him, his trade value kind of cratering after we bump him up to double A. But I do like Josh Smith. Ezekiel Duran is kind of, you know, he's toolsy. He's a little bit like Canario, where he has to be added to the 40-man roster. Canario is already on the 40-man, but Duran has to be added to the 40-man after this season, and he's not particularly close to the majors. He's probably going to open next year at double A, and he's struck out a lot at certain stops. So just having that guy who's taken up a 40-man spot and isn't all that close to the majors, that's not something the Yankees really wanted to deal with. So, I mean, it wasn't that hard to pry him loose from them. And Trevor Halver is a nice cautionary tale to not freak out about pop-up guys in April or May. Like he went off like crazy in the first like 10 games this year, and then hasn't done a ton since, and is old for the level and can't really play defense anywhere. So not that into him. Glenn Otto is a nice cautionary tale to not judge pitching prospects just by strikeouts. You know, maybe he can be a back end starter, but a lot of people think he's a reliever just due to the lack of a deep repertoire. So not really into those last three guys. I like Josh Smith. Kevin Gowdy, I think, is just worth mentioning. He came over from Philly. He was a high upside prep righty like 5 years ago and had a ton of arm injuries, but he's bounced back this season and reestablished some trade value. But he's kind of more of a watch list guy right now. Now, I mean, they did just give up. I mean, Gallo, you know, I think that they probably shopped him around, and like, I'm not saying that there were better offers out there, but I don't know. I think maybe they pulled the trigger too quickly on this one. They did this one a few days before the deadline. And, you know, I really think the way that Gallo profiles in Yankee Stadium, like, I think they could have maybe squeezed the Yankees a bit harder than they did. You know how much Cashman loves these guys with the 80 grade power. You know, I would have been like, just, you can keep Otto, you can keep Hover, you can keep Duran. We want someone better to headline this deal. We want it to be Pereira and Josh Smith, and, you know, maybe we want Kevin Alcantara, like something like that. I mean, I think that you could have maybe squeezed a bit more out of New York for Gallo.
Well, we got more to get to, but we got to take care of a little business first, a little good little piece of business, as a legendary announcer Jim Ross would say. Couple words from our sponsors. If there's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions, and even more so making the right decision. Listen up, folks. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WynnBET, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WynnBET is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. WynnBET brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? You can head into WynnBET's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down in blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at Baccarat. WinBet is currently available in 6 states while rapidly expanding. At WinBet, the possibilities are limitless. WinBet is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. Download WinBet now. That's WYNNBET. WinBet, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcasts. Also, NFL is back on Thrive Fantasy. Thrive Fantasy has over $100,000 guaranteed for NFL Week 1. With Thrive Fantasy, you can eliminate the countless hours of research and focus on only the top-tier athletes that have the biggest impact on the game. Sign up today and get a free 6-month RotoWire subscription. Here's how you can claim your free RotoWire sub. Go to rotowire.com/thrive. Deposit a minimum of $10 and receive a 100% deposit bonus up to $100. Then play your first paid contest and receive a free 6-month RotoWire subscription. So, James, as we continue on here, you know, with the Rays, it felt like getting rid of Rich Hill, kind of like a cost-cutting move, although Rich Hill, maybe they spotted something with him because he hasn't been very good with the Mets. But with him and Diego Castillo, kind of felt like cost-cutting measures. But did they actually get a decent prospect back for Diego Castillo, the Rays?
Austin Shenton he's fine. He's not on my top 400 yet. He's no Caden Polkovich,
I like that name.
Who is still in the Mariners system.
Is he a Wisconsin guy?
Yeah, you part of that hotbed. So, yeah. that hotbed of busts.
kind of felt bad about that take, but I mean it's deserved.
Those guys got to rally and prove that take incorrect.
That's true.
But Shenton, you know, he's fine. He's older. Tacoma or what's their high A affiliate?
The Rays?
No, the Mariners. It's a hitter friendly park. I mean, you look at what he did there. He struck out a decent amount. He was 23. He was at high A. Then he goes to double A, 10 games there. BABIP over 400. I think the Mariners did pretty well to cash him out when they did. He's just the type of guy where the Rays are just the worst place for him to go because, you know, it's just he really has to max out basically to be a guy that gets significant playing time with them. I think you're right. Like, I think, and we saw what relievers went for. Craig Kimbrell got a really nice player back in Nick Madrigal, but the rest of the relievers that got moved really didn't fetch that much at all.
Yeah, Cody Hoyer too. Pretty nice.
Right, yeah. I'm actually plugged Hoyer into my Tout Wars lineup this week.
hey, that's not the worst in a draft and hold. I mean, some of my draft and holds plugging in a lot worse than that.
I'm trying to catch Matt Williams. We're battling at the top of the Tout Wars draft and hold leaderboard, and this is maybe my last week where I'm going to try to get some saves. And if I don't get any saves this week from Hoyer out of Vino, I might just punt saves the rest of the way there, but
punt time.
Might be punting time. But
by the way, High A Everett, I think is Modesto. I need a Modesto nuts hat, by the way. still looking to grab one of those.
Everett's a pretty hitter friendly park, and I mean Shenton's fine. He doesn't. Like I mentioned, Polkovich is rocking a 41% hard hit rate, and Shenton's rocking a 30% hard hit rate, and Shenton's older, and so I think people are maybe getting a little too excited on him. So I kind of wanted to mention that. The trade that maybe took me by the most surprise that the Rays made. Not because they traded for Jordan Luplow. I mean, he's a classic Rays platoon guy. He mashes lefties. But Peyton Battenfield was a guy who I think I put inside my top 200 on the last update. And I'm kind of a little bit second guessing that ranking, just based on the fact that the Rays were willing to part with him for Lucklow. Battenfield is a big time strike thrower. He's, you know, statistically, he stacks up with almost any pitching prospect in the minors this year. I know he's old and he's almost 24. He's only made 7 appearances at Double A, but I was pretty high on Battenfield. So the fact that they traded him for Luplow was a little surprising to me. So I'm kind of interested to see how he does in his new org. I mean, Luplow's a classic Rays guy. I'm sure he'll help them down the stretch. So, you know, they might just be thinking, hey, like, we've got so many pitchers. We don't know what to do with all of them. And this guy is not going to help us this year. Luplow will help us this year. So, you know, maybe it ends up working out for both sides. But that was one of the more surprising deals at the deadline, because I thought Battenfield was someone that they might want to hang on to.
You know, they're not on our rundown, but I have to ask about the Colorado Rockies not trading Trevor Story, because given some of the other returns, it's hard to imagine they didn't have a better option on the table than just receiving a comp pick once he signs with another team. Maybe it was like they got gun shy after the backlash to the Arenado deal. It's just hard to fathom. I mean, hard to make any sense of that move to stand pat on Trevor Story.
I picture like the Rockies front office, like the phones ringing and like no one being there to pick up the phones. like
I out to lunch completely.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know, man. Like,
yeah, they've been out to, I mean, like a long boozy lunch for, I mean,
you're just like, or like someone's like sleeping with like a newspaper like over their chest or something like that. And like a bunch of like takeout food just kind of sitting there, like flies are buzzing around and stuff. And like the phones are sort of ringing and like, you know, people are just kind of, you know, waking up from a nap and stuff like that. I mean, I don't really know. It's
kind of seems like a, I mean, maybe this is overthinking it, but it kind of seems like a, like, just, I don't really imagine this went into it, but it kind of like a spiteful thing to do to Story, like, because you attach that draft pick compensation to him, makes him, you probably dings his market value a little bit.
I don't know. Totally. I mean, I don't think that
a rotten move stinks all around.
I don't think that they did that, like, you know, intentionally. I mean, like, I don't think they were like, you know, we're gonna stick it to Story. Like, I don't think they did it like that. I think there was just maybe some really misguided, like, I've heard
maybe that should have gone into their thinking, like, maybe we should do right by our player here if we're gonna leave him.
I think it was maybe a little bit of like, you better get this level prospect if you're going to trade our best player, because then fans aren't going to want to come see us suck for the next 2 months. Like, I don't know.
They put more stock into, like, you know, butts and seats over the final 2 months. Not that Story would even really affect that. But they probably price that into their trade evaluation.
Yeah, people don't go to Rockies games because of the players in the lineup. Like, people go to Rockies games because it's beautiful and
it's like a party.
And you're looking for something to do. Like, you're looking to have some fun. Like, people, half the people at Rockies games aren't even watching the games. They're just hanging out and drinking, like, in those upper deck spots. So, like, that's crazy. And I really think, like, I think there was some reporting on this that maybe the Rockies started off with like a crazy high asking price that like sort of scared some teams away initially. And then by the time that they sort of were willing to lower it, you had teams sort of making other moves. You had, you know, the Brewers go get Eduardo Escobar. The Dodgers are like, well, we'll just get Trey Turner because he's better than Trevor Story. And, you know, by the time that they had sort of priced the return appropriately, they might not have had a buyer for him. And, I mean, you saw what the the Cubs had to settle for Chris Bryant, I might rather have the comp pick than what the Cubs got for Bryant. So, I think that they probably just misjudged the market in initial talks with these teams, and they're probably not a very easy team to do business with right now, especially during the season. It's very disappointing if you're a Rockies fan, of course, but I mean, none of us are really surprised that it went this way, and we'll see. We'll see what ends up happening on the open market with them.
Yeah, just more so like another crappy byproduct of their crappy moves. But yeah, you just hate to see it, them not do right by the player. He just was left confused, as he said, didn't have any idea what was going on. And now, imagine he loses money because of that deal to not trade him, because he will have that draft pick compensation attached to him in free agency. I would love to know, I don't know if we ever will know for sure, but which team it was that wanted to put Story in center field. Maybe that was the Dodgers. I don't know.
I think it was the Giants, maybe.
Okay, that makes some sense. But it's just hard to believe that didn't go anywhere. But anyway, Diamondbacks felt like they had more to do, but I guess they really didn't have a lot that was all that appealing on the market. They did trade Eduardo Escobar. Were you bummed that the Brewers had to part with the prospect they did have to part with to get him?
No, I think, Alberto Ciprian is the main guy that they gave up, just at least for fantasy. And usually at the deadline, like one or two interesting Dominican Summer League guys or Complex League guys get moved. And it's just kind of like, that team must have saw something in that guy. So Ciprian's just a guy that I think you should just keep an eye on. We'll see how he does over the rest of the season. But, I mean, he has really stellar numbers early in the DSL. So just a guy to monitor in deep leagues.
And the Phillies, they bring in Hans Kraus as part of that deal with Texas. So I remember I had Hans Kraus rostered on a Dynasty League or two, maybe an RDI. Seems like the star has fallen a little bit. It never was all that high, but do you think this is a decent buy on Kraus for the Phillies?
I think it was a decent buy on Howard by the Rangers, because I think now the Rangers don't have much track record of developing pitching prospects. Howard, obviously no longer prospect eligible, but I mean, he's still basically a pitching prospect. I think just getting him out of Philly, I think, I've been with Howard, there's a few guys where like they just seem like different pitchers from like when we saw him in like 2019. Like Spencer Howard just looked like a future frontline pitcher in the Arizona Fall League when we saw him. And he just hasn't been anywhere close to that. Been really reliant on his fastball. Despite having all these off-speed pitches that just look really nasty back in the AFL. And so I think hopefully a change of scenery, maybe, different sort of philosophy in terms of how he's getting developed could really help Spencer Howard. Hans Kraus, I just wanted to mention as, he used to be I don't think I ever had him number one in the Rangers system. I think he was, by some outlets, the number one Rangers prospect a while ago. And I'm pretty sure he's a reliever at this point. So I just wanted to mention that. But if you're holding on to Spencer Howard shares in Dynasty, I think you have to be happy that he's on to a different organization that is going to sort of put his development first rather than winning ball games first. Because I think he was sort of the fact that the Phillies are kind of like the NL Angels, where they just are trying to win so badly in the short term that like a guy like Spencer Howard, I think, just got jerked around so much that it was just really nice to see him get out of there. So I'm not saying that the stuff has to kind of return to where it was for him to kind of still make good on that upside. But I'm still happy that he's in a different organization.
Speaking of jerking around, by the way, did you see that Senzel's going back to short? How hilarious is that? Just insane that they
crazy, man.
I mean, they just, that guy's development. Development is a real thing that separates organizations, and the Reds have shown some progress on that front, but they still do some head scratching things.
You know, I'm not, I wonder
Nick
about
Lodolo, by the way. Like, Lodolo bumped up. Love to see that. Sorry to cut you up.
Well, I was just going to say, like, Senzel just.
He might time to close the book a little bit.
I'm iffy on blaming the Reds for that. I think it might.
We did him no favors anyway.
That's true. And I mean, the injuries and missed time have definitely contributed. But I mean, he was a guy with makeup concerns dating back to like high A, double A.
And, I didn't really know that. I never heard that.
I just wonder about that. You know, I don't necessarily want to put it all on the Reds. I mean, like Jose Barrero seems to be developing just fine. Now it's easier. Like the Reds did him absolutely no favors. You're totally right. Because his two best positions were third base and second base. And they were just like, nope, we're not going to let you play there.
Nah. We're good on those spots.
But those spots aren't
a need at the big league level. Yeah. Anyway, that's crazy. But yeah, I did enjoy seeing Nick Lodolo bumped up. But as we wrap things up here, James, I know you're doing a first year player draft mock. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing there?
Yeah. Jesse Roach, who you should all be following if you're not, over at Baseball Prospectus, set up a really, really stacked group of prospect analysts to do a 15-team first-year player draft mock. You know, a lot of people you'd recognize, a lot of friends of the show, like Chris Welsh, Jeff Ponce, Ray Butler, Chris Clegg, Eric Cross, Eddie Almaguer, Matt Eddy, Brett Sayre, Shelley Verstrate, Chris Blessing, Michael Helpern, Ben Wilson, Chris Crawford. I think that's everyone. I mean, just really a loaded group of smart prospect analysts. And we're doing now we're not including international guys because they're not going to sign until January, I think. So we don't even know who's exactly going to sign. So I think it's smart to not include the international side there. And then it's also just a tough market to research and kind of figure out right now. So it's just players from this past draft. And I was picking fifth, and I got my number two guy. I got Henry Davis with the fifth pick, and Henry Davis actually went yard in his first pro game, albeit in the complex league. But Jordan Lawler went first to Chris Welsh, then Marcelo Mayer, Khalil Watson, Jack Leiter. So I got Davis at five, which I was really stoked about. I think I tweeted out a link a couple days ago. So if you want to see the full board, you can go to my Twitter page. But I also then, so my second pick, I was picking 26th, and I was really, really torn between Connor Norby, second baseman who the Orioles selected, and Will Bednar, the righty that the Giants selected. I went with Norby. I mean, I think he's the sleeper of this draft class, college hitter, could move to the majors pretty quickly. Jeff actually told me that the Prospects Live guys got 70 grade run times on Norby. He hit like over 410 since the start of the 2020 season. So I just think Norby's awesome. I like him more than Colton Cowser, who the Orioles took fifth overall. And so getting him at 26th, I was excited. But Will Bednar, I also love the fit with him in San Francisco. So that was a tough call. I kind of get the sense that, like, I'm going to be recommending everyone just try to pop Norby in the second round of their first year player drafts. If that's possible, of course, you could go out and just rake and then maybe the price gets a bit higher. But then with my third pick, at pick 35, I took Jackson Merrill, the infielder the Padres took in the first round. So I'm pretty pumped about how this is going. You know, we're all the thing about a draft class like this, where it's just a really weak draft class and really no consensus outside the top seven or eight guys, is you're going to be able to go get your guys basically. And you're going to feel, or at least you should feel, pretty good about the values you're getting in a first year player draft when that's the case. So it's been a lot of fun. I think people could learn a lot and just kind of get a good feel for, like, if your trade deadline hasn't passed and you're going to be trading your picks in your dynasty league, this will give you a good sense of sort of which type of players are going to be available in which spots.
Kumar Rocker, by the way, probably won't be available in a lot of drafts because he didn't sign. And what do you think is next for him? He's not going back to school. What does Kumar Rocker do for the next year, do you think?
I think I saw Jeff say he might be going to Asia, which would make sense.
Yeah, totally.
I mean,
otherwise, that's, yeah, I mean, it's that's so, a tough situation.
It's such a bummer. I mean, like, obviously his camp's saying he's healthy. The Mets are going to get a pick next year out of this.
Yeah, like the 11th pick, isn't it? Like, just because they get a pick that's right around the 10th pick anyway. It's, forget it's the rule exactly.
It sucks. It sucks for Rocker. Really bummed for him. I mean, his, you know, he was a guy, he was like the talk of, he was the talk of college baseball for a couple of years, basically.
Didn't he throw like a couple no-nos or a couple perfect games or something? But he was like the name for many years from this class.
And Judd Fabian didn't sign with the Red Sox either.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
He's going back to Florida, I believe. A couple guys who probably would have gotten taken in the top 30 or so are gone. So, I mean, just makes an already weak class all the more weaker. Apologies to anyone who's loaded up on draft picks for this upcoming first year player draft. It's definitely not stacked.
No, I drafted Blaze Jordan in the staff keeper league. And, I saw you tweeting about him recently. Sounds like Blaze is creeping up your board. You like what you've seen from him?
Yeah, man. I snuck him in to the back of the top 400 dynasty update that went up last week. And even just since then, his stock has climbed. With Blaze, I went back and looked at the outlook for the magazine. I mean, with him, the upside was just always incredibly obvious, right? Like, just like the youngest player, I think, of note from last year's draft. He's still like 18 and a half right now. Had as much power potential really as anyone from that draft, just crazy bat speed, crazy raw power. And it was just a matter of, you know, was he going to hit enough? How was the body going to age? And, you know, he opened in the complex league, which is exactly where you'd expect him to end up. I mean, I don't think anyone thought he was going to low A initially, but to go to the complex league and be one of the best hitters in the Florida Complex League, 17% strikeout rate, 304 ISO, four homers in 19 games, already getting the bump up to low A. I mean, you got to be feeling really good if you got Blaze Jordan in a first-year player draft. He's going to be inside my top 100 on the next update. I mean, if he hits at low A, as an 18-year-old, if he strikes out less than like 25% of the time, hits for average, hits for power, Blaze Jordan could be like a top 25 prospect by the end of the year. He's just really, really exciting. So I wanted to mention that. I know there's a lot of a lot of card collectors who listen to the show. Get those really? Blaze Jordan rookie cards.
Every white rapper's future favorite player, Blaze Jordan.
Well, you know, like Jason Dominguez was going to be just a big time card, right? Like, because it's the Yankees. It's like this super hyped up phenom. Blaze Jordan, kind of the same thing. Like, he was a YouTube sensation back when he was 15. His first name's Blaze. He's a Red Sox prospect. Like, if this guy puts up crazy stats in the lower levels of the minors, I mean, his stock's just going to explode.
Yeah, I see those maybe replacing like the throwback Nuggets jerseys in New England among like 17, 18-year-old white rappers. James, anything else before we pick our walk-up songs for the week?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention and shouts to the Young Bat Company for kind of alerting me to this. I originally excluded Patrick Sandoval from my top 400 dynasty update unintentionally. I love Sandoval. I've got him all over the place, and he wasn't on the last update, and he kind of slipped through the cracks for me on this last update. So I just wanted to mention that, like, in case you went and looked at it, like, the first day or two it was live on the site and didn't see Patrick Sandoval there, just know that that was a mistake. He is there now. He's inside the top. I am at 169 right now. So,
wow.
I'm a big Patrick Sandoval guy. So I just wanted to mention that oversight. And then, as I alluded to, I'm basically going to release an update of the top 100. It's not going to be a full top 400 update, but an update to the top 100 prospects as soon as Wander Franco graduates. Kelenic's already graduated, but I felt it'd be fitting to kind of adjust that top 100 or so once those two big stars have graduated.
Nice. Appreciate that heads up on those two items, and appreciate all the insight as always. Why don't you pick the walk-up song first this week, James? What you got?
So I'm going to do Public Enemy, Welcome to the Terror Dome.
Nice. That's a classic.
I think, Public Enemy, I think, probably has had the most sort of positive social impact of any hip-hop rapper or group, probably. And, you know, a lot of their songs still are very applicable today. So, and Welcome to the Terror Dome. I mean, what a great track to walk up to. So
I'm surprised I didn't even think of that one before, but that's a great walk-up song.
I don't really mind which part of the song is in my walk-up. I think it all pretty much works.
Nice. That's a good one. Now, I last week picked one, or maybe a couple weeks ago, I forget what it was, but picked a song from Better Call Saul. And I figured, you know, since I've been on such a Sopranos kick, I got to have one from The Sopranos too. Two of the best shows in TV history. The big two, actually, you know, that's what we call them. Sopranos and Better Call Saul. So I got to have, I picked a song from one of my favorite episodes. It's Living on a Thin Line by the Kinks, from the episode with Tracy and, you know, Ralph Cifaretto, kind of a dark episode. But the first 32 seconds of that song just bang, and you turn up some bass. It really hits pretty hard. And by the way, James, I don't know if it's just because I've been watching The Sopranos or what, but been going to a lot of Italian delis around here in Madison, hitting up some good sandwiches, some good pasta salads. Have you ever been to Gino's Italian Deli in Madison?
I have not.
Gino's is really good.
I go to the Jewish delis.
Nice. I haven't been to many of those, but
I mean, there's a lot of. Actually, Alimentari, I think, counts as an Italian deli, although they kind of have a little bit of everything. I've been to that one. I've not been to Gino's though.
Maybe one someday soon we should hit up lunch, you know.
Hell yeah.
Treat you to lunch at Gino's. Pretty damn good. But I figured I had to get a Sopranos song and Walking on a Thin Line. Man, look good track. Well, James, appreciate everything, man. Good luck in the rest of that first year player mock. I'll look forward to hearing more about that. And hope you all will join us next week on the RotoWire Prospect Podcast, sponsored by WinBet.
Try RotoWire today, free for 10 days. Get our premium tools, rankings, analysis, and breaking news alerts. No credit card required. Go to rotowire.com/try.